Welcome to the Coaching Up Podcast, shining a light on sports and building up the community of those within it. Here are your hosts, Anthony Davis and Nikki Murphy.
Nikki, welcome back. How are you?
Wonderful on this rainy, what is it, Tuesday?
That's Tuesday. That's what they tell me.
Easter Monday throws it off a bit. You know, it feels like a Monday, but it's Tuesday, so I feel good about that. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. I need to bring this in somehow. Oh. Hold on for me real quick. I got a little something. I always have a little something. If you're paying attention at home, you might know what this is, too. Now, here we go.
Here we go. Wow.
This is aggressive.
That is intense. I feel like I should be standing up and saluting someone.
So, I'm going to fade her out here.
Okay.
But, so, we've done some interesting things on this podcast. And, you know, I get really giddy when we have countries that follow the podcast. Yeah. And most of them have been, you know, England. We have friends there.
Yes.
Scotland. We have family there. Yeah. Jamaica. We may have friends that vacation there during spring break. Canada, we have friends that can just hop a border.
Sure.
It's impressive, but yeah. However, that was just the Romanian national anthem.
Wow.
I think it's because Nadia Comăneci, the 76, I believe she was 1976, perfect 10 gymnast from Romania, is now a listener of ours. It's somebody in Romania. I'm thinking it's Nadia Comăneci, though.
Okay. Yeah. I'll take it. Shout out to Nadia. Is that right?
We're going to call it Nadia's. Nadia's a listener. Yeah.
Okay. Shout out.
So, a listener in Romania. I mean, that, come on. I mean, the other one.
Yeah, well,
you can poo-poo them if you want, but Romania, I dare you to try to find somebody you know in Romania. Not going to happen.
Gosh, I was looking at Romania to be like, well, what's in Romania? And the first thing that popped up was like, it has the heaviest building in the world. I was like, oh, that's cool. I'm sure it's beautiful and there's other fun facts, but that one really, I was like, wow.
I like that you did a little bit of research on it,
a
too.
A tiny bit.
I knew about Nadia Comăneci already. I don't even know why.
Yeah, I don't know.
But then I Googled the national anthem and I was like, oh man, this is intense and I have to play it. It's fantastic.
Yeah, I mean, it was right after we posted the episode with Greek. Does he know someone from Romania? Is he messing with us? Is that an April Fool's joke?
You know, I don't know. I was expecting a Greece listener.
Yeah, that would make sense.
A Grecian, I believe,
sure.
listener.
Yeah.
Was not expecting a Romanian listener to pop up, but
no.
Welcome.
Interesting.
Welcome to the
Well,
podcast.
We welcome you all.
Welcome to the Catching Up family, Mr. Romania or Mrs. Romania.
Mrs.
Nadia Comăneci. So what else is up? Anything else going over
yeah,
there?
Yeah, well, I wanted... Yeah, well, I wanted to talk about that survey form that we posted. When did
yes.
we do that? Like 2 weeks ago, right?
We did, yeah.
And so we got some feedback coming in, and really the thought behind the form is just to give parents an outlet, I think, for, you know, their voice to be heard, but anonymously, right? I think sometimes you talk to people and they're worried about being super honest because they don't want, you know, their reputation to be negative in the sports world. You know, it's kind of that big of a deal around
here.
People
are pretty apprehensive. They're kind of secretive about it. They're like, do I really want to? Because then maybe the coach will know and won't
yes.
play, and they won't play my kid.
Yes, that's right.
We got scared parents.
Yeah, and I don't blame them. And I also play that game. So I get it. So anyway, we wanted to just highlight some of the feedback that we get, you sure. know, just to shine a light on it. Right. And so we have a parent who filled out this form for an 11 to 12 year old who plays soccer, and they are wanting their kid to love the game as much as they did, which I think is really nice. They're satisfied with their coach. They chose other for ref officiating satisfaction, said, take the good with the bad these days, which I definitely get.
They must not have had Greek as a ref because
no, it's all good.
That's not Greek. It's not my boy Greek.
That's not. And what struggles do you face as a parent of your athlete? They said they help coach their kid and that it's hard to enjoy the good moments all the time when you have 10 other players to worry about. Which I thought you and I could kind of relate to that.
1,000%. Yeah.
Yeah. And if you could change one thing or two or three about youth sports, what would it be? And they said number one, cost, and number two, tryouts. So that was a little feedback form. We wanted to kind of tie it in and keep it relevant because it really does matter. You know, when I saw about, you know, coaching your own kid, it's really true, isn't it? You know, I really felt like when I was coaching Celia in soccer, I was like not giving her enough attention.
Right.
You know, and then I'm doing her a disservice. I feel I was giving all the other kids attention, but it's this, I am a little opposite, I think, than some coaches where I want to coach the other kids. And then I'll just coach my kid later, I think, but well, later I never
think,
comes.
I think it's a double-edged sword because you don't want to be, you don't want to be labeled as the person that coaches their own kid.
Yeah.
Because I mean, when I coached baseball, I definitely had a assistant coach who only coached his kid. You know, a lot of kids would be going through everything and he'd pay attention to the other kids, but the real hard coaching that he would do would only be his kid. I didn't want to be that. I didn't want to be that coach. Like that's not who
right.
I wanted.
So then you swing the opposite way.
Yeah. And
then
you kind of like neglect your kid. Like your kid almost gets like deprived in a way.
Yeah.
Like, you know, so yeah, totally. I get it. But I also picked up on something else you said with that write up when they said that they want their kid to love soccer as much as they did. That can be kind of weird and difficult too, right? Because like you can't force your kid to like it as much as you did. And sometimes that's hard because like I love baseball. And fortunately for me, Kevin loves baseball too. But if he did not, I think it'd be hard for me. Like I really do. I think it would be very difficult for me as a father who has a son, loves baseball, would love to get his kid into baseball. But I have plenty of friends that is the reality, right? So they love baseball and their kid's just not into sports and they're artists or they do something else, which is, you know, perfectly great, but you have to be able to accept that as well.
Yeah. You have to navigate that for sure.
Now, if you want to introduce it as something that you loved and see if they like it, then that's cool. Right. So
yeah, that's fair.
Yeah. Whether they fall in love with it to the point where you fell in love with it, you know?
Yeah. So that was one feedback form that we got.
Whoever that was, you're going to remain anonymous.
Yeah. Again, it's anonymous, right? We don't know. And we don't need to, right?
No, absolutely not.
Just shining a light on it. So, yeah, thanks, listener.
That was Ryan F. in, I'm just kidding. I wasn't totally making it up.
Ryan Fitzgerald.
In Finksburg.
123 Main Street.
In Romania. Just kidding.
Was not so a who Romanian do we have friend. One today?
Yeah, so, I mean, we're,
Does he have friends in Romania?
No, I don't think
no?
so. No? No, I mean, I've known this guy for a while.
Yeah.
So Matt Radabal is a buddy of mine from Calvert Hall. So graduated
of
with
course.
Me. Graduated with me in 1998, Calvert Hall. He was on the lacrosse team there.
Nice.
And he actually married a good friend of mine who went to Mercy High School, same year as us. And she was actually, I was closer with her in high school. She was in my friend group. He was in the smart group.
Oh.
At Calvert Hall.
Okay.
That wasn't
Were you
my
not
jam.
In the smart group?
I mean, I was in the semi-smart group. I mean, these
you had
guys,
your toe in there.
These guys that Matt hung out with, they were the smarties. So, so great guys. His group, great group of guys. So Heather, his wife, was good friends of mine in our friend group, and then both Matt and Heather ended up going to Mount St. Mary's and going to school with Christine, with my wife. So that's how I met my wife.
Okay.
Was through these two. So
matchmaker.
Yeah. They always would tell me about this girl from New York, and here we are.
Oh,
here we are.
That's so fun.
Yeah. So,
do they remind you about that often?
No,
like,
not
hey,
really.
You gonna pick up the tab here? Cause
no, they're cool about it. No,
oh, okay. Yeah,
they're chill with it. No, but good, great family. They got two boys. Their oldest is a student at Calvert Hall now. He's a freshman this year, so he'll be a sophomore next year when Kev enters. And then they have a younger son as well. So he played lacrosse at Calvert Hall and at Mount St. Mary's. He actually is a high school coach, or was a high school coach of soccer, actually.
Nice.
But he also is a NCAA Division I ref in lacrosse. So we thought that it was a great piggyback opportunity for us to grab him on and see what it's like in the college level. So Greek was more on the – you know, club, rec, travel,
high school
aspect, dealing in high school. Yeah. So dealing with the coaches and the players, but also the parents, right? Matt at the NCAA Division I level, I'm sure he hears parents.
I'm sure he
but
does.
But I'm sure that he doesn't necessarily have to interact too much with them. But I think there's going to be a lot of similarities, I would think, between the way you talk to the players and coaches. But I'm actually really excited to kind of dive into that and see what Matt brings to the table for that. All right. So now we're excited to bring in Matt Radaball. Matt, how are you today?
I am well. How are all of you?
We are. We're living the dream now that we have you on the audio, buddy. Yes. We're kicking.
Cut out on us now.
Matt, just so you know, I did mention in the intro that you were in this in what I call the smart group at Calvert Hall, and I was kind of in the not smart group. So I said, you know, hello, nice guys. You were just really smart, but you and I together couldn't figure out the audio today. Just rolling, but we got there. We're there.
It took a bit.
Yeah. Just a little bit.
Should we do our numbers to check in with each other and see
how
we're
doing? Yeah, let's do our numbers first, and then we'll get the rundown. That's cool. Yeah.
Yeah. So Matt, are you familiar with the numbers game where we give a percentage?
I am not. So you will have to run me.
Okay. Yeah. So based on how your day is going today, give us a percentage from 0% to 100% on how your day is going. So if you're having a worse day, your number's going to be lower, or a solid day, your number's going to be higher. And then just a story about why. So what's your number today?
I'm at 90 because I was off of school today. So that was a great day for me.
So you teach?
So I teach at Calvert Hall, which is where Anthony and I went to high school. So I've been there since 2004. Yes.
What do you teach?
Life.
Wow. That was a lot right there in one word.
Yeah. So I'm the social studies department chair. Depending on the year, I'll teach anything from government to world history to U.S. history. I kind of throw myself where needed.
Very cool. So you're coming in hard with a 90. That's good, though. That's a good start, man.
Well, it's a day off, so.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, I get you. Nikki, what do you got? What do you got for your number?
Yeah, I think I'll probably go with a 92. I coach little kids for a company called Dynasty Sports Academy. So I had a class this morning and they were just the cutest and it was so fun. We were pretending to be little mice and big elephants and dribbling the soccer ball around. And it was just, you know, it's a half an hour of just acting like a fool and the kids just love it. And it's super cute. So I did that today and, lacrosse practice was canceled because of the rain, so I got some stuff done around the house. So I'm feeling pretty good about that.
Very cool.
What about you, Anthony?
I'll stay in the 90s. I'm gonna say 91. Yes. I mean, I was higher, but the Orioles are losing 4-1, and I don't like that. So drop me down a little bit. But I had to work today. Had to go into the office today, and I do like my job, but it's just getting. I mean, you know, it's raining out. It was just kind of blah today. So I'm still doing all right. You know. I'm kicking with a 91. We got that, you know, Romanian listener keeping the podcast worldwide. So I'm digging that. But I am excited to talk to Matt because, like I said in the intro, Matt and I have known each other for a long time. And I'm actually very proud of the fact that he has worked himself up to the level of referee that he has gotten to. So, Matt, why don't you give us a rundown kind of I already said you were, you know, lacrosse player at Calvert Hall, lacrosse player at Mount St. Mary's. What have you been doing since college in the sports world?
Part of the reason why I became a teacher is because I wanted to coach. So I have coached lacrosse at Southern High School. That was where I first taught right out of college. At Calvert Hall, coached soccer, like JV and fresh off soccer at Calvert Hall. The varsity soccer coach at Loch Raven for about 10 years, from about 2011 to 2021, I think. And then I've been reffing lacrosse since 2007 when I started. I did a little basketball at the start for about 4 or 5 years, but I just do lacrosse now.
Very cool. And so do you also coach the boys in lacrosse?
So I have two sons. The freshman in high school is Mason, and I've coached his club team for the past 2 years for lacrosse. And I'm also helping out on Bennett's, who's my sixth grader. So soccer, like everybody goes by birth year, whereas lacrosse goes by your graduation year.
Right.
So
I love how it's different. It keeps everybody on their toes. Yeah.
It's really hard to
baseball
wrap my mind
goes by
that.
May 1st. It's annoying. Whatever the heck that means. May 1st.
Well, the other, and it used to, like, I now know how old somebody is So it used to be like when you asked like how, like, yeah, like, you know, how old are you? Well, I'm in sixth grade. Well, now they'll say like, oh, I'm a 20-30.
Yes. Okay.
I now know what that is.
Let me do the math.
That's very true.
Right. Calculating in my head.
Yeah. It's like I now know, oh, that's sixth grader. Like I know exactly.
Yeah. Well, you know a 20-30, but isn't it hard to like, oh, I'm a 20-32. And you're like, okay, hold on. You know. We just
well, I know that's
take,
a fourth grader.
Take the six
so it's
and
just...
subtract the two.
Exactly.
And then when you talk to someone who's like, you know, with soccer, it's like, I'm the 2011 head coach. All right, you're also a sixth grader. There you go. All right.
Yes, got
perfect.
It.
Perfect. So you've been reffing lacrosse now for a while. What level did you start at?
Correct.
Doing the refereeing for lacrosse?
Like little kids.
Okay, like, so you started out like in the rec club world there and then moved up. Did you,
correct.
You did some high school stuff and then you moved into some NCAA stuff, correct?
Yeah, I've been doing college since 2011. Well, 2012. I tried out in the fall of 2011 and then 2012 is when I started doing college.
So there's a tryout process. Okay, cool. So how does that work?
They run local college scrimmages. There's like a set one, you know, or two locations that they'll have in the fall. And so the organization that runs college lacrosse is called NILOA, which is National Intercollegiate Lacrosse Officials Association. And so like they're like the regional head, you know, like observes people trying out and, you know, recommends to the top assigners, like, hey, you know, we should bring this person on, we shouldn't bring this person on, yada, yada, yada.
Wow, that's interesting. That's cool.
At that level, are all the refs certified?
So it's not like soccer,
yeah,
where you have to be certified by a U.S. Right. soccer. With there is a USA Lacrosse, mm-hmm. and that's actually, I have a USA Lacrosse membership, and it's mainly mm-hmm. because I think that's how we get our insurance.
Insurance, that's right, yeah. As a ref, you have that?
Yeah, oh yeah, every ref yeah. needs insurance. Mm-hmm. Like that's like a thing for every, like every sport, everybody's insured through whatever organization. Like there's a national organization like NASO, which is like a national sports officials, North American sports officials type thing. So you're either getting it through like an organization like that or like a regional organization, but shouldn't be going out on the field without insurance.
Right.
No, it definitely sounds like something you want to definitely cover yourself for. For sure.
Yeah.
So why did you get into refereeing? So what was the main reason why you're doing what you're doing?
When I moved up, I was living in Annapolis, like right after college. And then when I moved back up here and started teaching at Calvert Hall, I was bartending down in Annapolis. And so like that drive was just beginning a little too much going from Towson to Annapolis. So a teacher friend of mine said, hey, I'm reffing basketball. We need officials. Do you want to do it? I was like, yeah, I would love to. So I started doing basketball. And then that spring I started doing lacrosse and went from there.
But you have a deep rooted love for lacrosse as well, right? So, I mean, you've played it your whole life, obviously. And I mean, I think that like that always becomes, you know, one of the reasons why, you know, people stay either go into coaching like you did. Like I did for baseball, like Nikki did for lacrosse. So I'm sure that also plays a role into, you know, why you want to stay connected to the game.
It's just really fun being on the field or being on the court. You know, you're part of the game mm-hmm. and everyone else is like in the stands. It's fun. It's really, really fun.
Yeah, no doubt. So what was your first experience like at the D1 ranks? Because I know that you do a lot of high level games now with some national power. So what was your first experience like in that D1 realm?
Try not to fall on my face.
What is the reffing crew? Are there, because there's a good amount of refs on that field. Are there like four?
It's three.
Four
it's a three-man crew.
Three? Okay.
No, it's three. Yeah.
Okay.
So it's very much akin, you know, how like the announcers will say, like if you're in like a big game, it takes like, you get like the first hit in, you know, like if you're playing football before you feel like, all right, now I'm grounded or whatever.
Right, right.
There is something like that with like officiating.
Yeah.
That first time you make a call, like, all right, now I'm in it. Mm-hmm. Now it's your training kicks in or your intuition kicks in. But yeah, like the first time you're out there, you're just trying to like, you know, it'd be cool if my voice doesn't crack or I would
Did
like
you...
for that to not happen.
Did you have like a mentor or a group of refs that you worked with that kind of like helped you out, or were you thrown out in to work with like a group that you didn't know? And what did that look like?
Well, so like I will say there's like a group of guys. I mean, I'm on like three or four like referee text chains with like various group of guys. And so I would have like that initial group that I latched on to helped me immensely. Mm-hmm. So just, and it's not like football, you know, like where you're working with like a set crew every time. Like it's very much like basketball or soccer. Like you're working with different people every, you know, every time you go out. So you pick up things, you know, where you can. I'm a very much a believer of never talk unless it improves the silence. So like I listen a lot, and you know, when I'm comfortable, then I'll start talking a little bit more, but you know, try and figure out how everything plays out and go from there.
Yeah, that's definitely interesting. So when we talked to Greek in the last episode, he did a lot of reffing for soccer at the high school level, and he always, you know, the comfortability when he was with the same crew. So we were talking about, you know, how if something happens right in front of one of the referees and they don't make the call, and the referee on the other side of the field makes the call, that's what really drives coaches crazy, by the way. But when that happens, do you have that power to do that in lacrosse? And do you have the comfortability level to do that when you don't know the other guys that you're reffing with that day?
The more comfortability you have, the easier it is to make that call, because you know what, their bar for a flag is. So like or any foul or whatever, if it wasn't called and you see it, you know, well, obviously she must have been looking somewhere else. So like that's an easy flag to throw. Whereas if you haven't worked with someone before, you almost just like, well, you know what, that's their decision. And you know,
we're going to live to fight another day kind of thing. Yeah.
You have to go off of that, I guess. Right.
Yeah. There's also like, you only go fishing for felonies, not misdemeanors.
Well, I think lacrosse is,
that is not a line that I've come up with. That is something that, you know, that's kind of, but you know,
it's like out there.
Somebody gets decapitated. All right. That's, you know, someone's got to have that flag.
Yeah.
Got it.
if it's a slight push, you know, that person has decided not.
Yeah. I mean, that's what I was going to get. Especially. Yeah. I'm going to get at that. Like, you know, there's definitely things like even the novice lacrosse fan watching a game would be able to tell, you know, yeah, you're not supposed to do that. Like you could probably get 5 to 7 on the streets if you did that. But there's also some of those judgment calls, right? Where it could go either way. And you as a referee have to make that ultimate, you know, determination. And I would imagine, and you can tell me if I'm wrong, is the level of play or the type of game that you're in, could that dictate some of those calls as well? You know, kind of like, you know, in a Super Bowl, a ticky-tack foul, like you don't make the call in that game, but you might make that call week one.
Yeah, I think another thing is the skill of the players. The ticky-tack call per se, the person fights through it, so you don't have to like their athleticism takes care of it for you. So a lot of the times, the whole idea of the principle of advantage, disadvantage, like mm-hmm. player's advantage taken away from him or her, then okay, that's a foul. Person's able to get through the contact relatively easily, and you know, you've got nothing. So that,
do players at that level make your job a little easier at that Division One level?
Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh, yes.
Yeah, yeah, I get that for sure. That advantage. Like, when you call advantage, do you have a signal to the coaches and the players, or is it just understood?
So in lacrosse, it's play on.
You yell it. So play on. Yeah.
Correct, and it's not like soccer where you throw both arms in front of you.
Yep.
You raise your arm, mm-hmm. and it's a little bit different now with because we have a shot clock.
Yeah.
So if there is a loose ball foul or something of that nature, you have to reset the shot clock. So more often than not, you're probably just going to kill the play and say, you know, play on, because the shot clock, it's easier to do it that way and make sure the ball's in the player's stick. And that can happen.
When you were reffing lacrosse at the rec level, did you go to the next level and finally get to college and you were like, this is where I want to be? Or what was that journey like for you?
Well, I mean, it wasn't linear. Like there were, you know, there were some years, you know, that I had a good schedule, and then some years I did not, kind of go up and down. I don't really do that much rec anymore just because of time constraints or like the youth club for lacrosse, which is a big thing now. But I did enjoy doing the little guys because you can just like, you know, coach them up as you're
doing
it. It's
more teaching, right?
Correct.
Yeah. As the ref, like, yeah, you make the call, but then you explain why. But
well,
in college,
yeah,
you're like,
a little
you can't
bit.
Do that. You know better.
Yeah. Yeah,
get in the
much,
box.
Yeah. Yeah.
Have a timeout on that chair.
I have actually used that phrase, sit there and think about what you've done, yes. But not in a college game, but in a high school game I have.
I would imagine that would be a little bit different, you know, when you're talking to NCAA Division I athletes when they're, you know, when they're doing some things they're not supposed to be doing. So have you being a coach influenced the way you referee? And I guess I'll use that as just by saying, you know, as a coach, I'm sure that you have been on the sideline, and I know you, and I've seen you ref. I mean, I've certainly seen you coach soccer. I saw you in the state title game up and down the sidelines. And I wouldn't say that you were ever in an official's head or ear, but do you referee differently because you were a coach as well? So do you kind of give a coach some more rope or some more, be more lenient to a coach who's voicing their opinion to you?
I think I'm a better official because I've coached and coached because I'm an official.
Yeah, that definitely makes sense.
And also, I, you know, like me as a younger coach, I was an idiot because I was young and stupid.
Same.
Or just young. I mean, the stupid is right. Just redundant. And, you know, as you grow older, you realize that, like, hey, you know, complaining about everything is stupid. Like, that gets you nowhere. Right. You want to focus your energy positively with regards to your team. And then if there are issues, you got to pick the big ones, not just everything. So yeah, that definitely plays a role. Also, like, you know, just from coaching, you know, game situations. So like, you know, like when to be looking over at the bench, cause you're expecting a timeout to happen where, you know, like, hey, this guy's running for his life with two long poles chasing after him. I better have my ridiculously large ears in tune for a timeout. So yeah, that definitely plays a role.
Yeah, and I've definitely seen you. So I've seen you on the sideline. I've seen you from the sidelines, I should say, reffing at Stevenson before. And I'm not gonna ask you what coaches have given you some troubles. I mean, because I know that you're still actively reffing, and that might be a little weird. But I've seen you get worked.
That would be frowned upon.
I've seen you get worked on the sidelines quite a bit, and I was always impressed because, like, I, you know, and not just because you're my friend, but like, you know, just the level of, I want to call it abuse, but for a lack of a better word, the amount of abuse that you guys take, and listen, Bobby Benson's one of my best friends. I've known him since we were kids. And man, we went to see him up at Providence last year, and my son Kevin was just like, "Dad, he is all up in this ref about like just like little things." And it's like, I'm like, I don't know how the hell he hasn't got thrown out yet. But it was like, it was more conversational, and I think with somebody like a Bobby, and you can tell me if I'm wrong, but somebody like Bobby or somebody like some of these coaches who, I mean, they've forgotten more about lacrosse than I will ever know. So they know the game. So, you know, their interpretation of what's happening on the field is at least an educated interpretation, right? Like some of these like rec ball coaches who get crazy, or, you know, lower level club ball coaches who get crazy, they're not going to get this rope, right? I mean, you're going to let these guys talk a little bit because of their knowledge level. Am I right?
Well, it's not so much the knowledge level, it's their job.
Right. Like, sure. Mm-hmm. And their pay scale too, right? Let's be honest.
Well, it's more so like, you know, so Bobby Benson, who longtime assistant at Hopkins and then at Maryland, is now the head coach of Providence. He has a bad year. So this is, I think this is year two for him.
Yep. That's
you
right.
Know,
yep.
If he goes, you know, like 1-5 in Big East play, like you might get fired. So like, this is his job.
Yes.
So like the whole
stress
idea,
level
like,
is intense.
Yeah.
For sure.
And like it's, you know, this isn't college football, but like this is also, these are
high
these
level,
are individuals'
right?
lives. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I got families that are going to have to move. So like that's a whole thing that goes into it. Yeah. So there's more leeway there.
Yeah.
And I would even say with like high level like MIAA, even varsity high school coaches. It's on a livelihood, obviously, but it sure. is yeah. something that they put a disturbingly large amount of time into so that they can get their $1 an hour salary when they all come down to it.
Yeah, I mean, the one thing
so
I
like,
do, you, that, yeah. do you think it's like a cultural thing on top of the pressure? You know, the yelling and the screaming is part of men's lacrosse?
Or is that not true? Just sports in general. I mean, I think that's just sports in general, to be honest with you.
Do you notice the difference between that, like, soccer and lacrosse in that?
Soccer referees take way more crap from players than
from
we
players.
Would.
Players.
Like, just like the,
yeah.
The, them, like, talking, like, I don't have
the
time
looks.
For that. yeah, well, it's also, like, they're very... And you can tell in their mechanics, like they're very just demonstrative. Like when they tell like a player enough, like they're literally like waving their hands very clearly, you know, so that everyone sees like that's, it's like kind of like an international signal, like, all right, you're done. Whereas, you know, if I'm communicating to a player, it's like, there's really no signals. I'm keeping my hands literally in my armpits. So I'm not making any signals because, you know, like just, I was just having a conversation. So it's a little bit different. And then Anthony, to your point with like rec end, it's mainly, I would say, like the bulk of our association, high school association, the most games that we do is with youth club games. There's a Howard County League every Saturday and Sunday, and there are a lot of outsized egos. You have parents. I mean, it's, I would say those are literally our toughest games that our high school association does. That's where you have, you know, all, a whole wide range of officials' abilities doing those games. That can get very tough. So I don't really do those games because they're the same time as like college games. But when I deal with like youth club officials in the summertime during the tournaments, my rope is quite small.
And, yeah, because I would imagine at the college level, you hear parents in the stands, but you don't necessarily have to.
It's more of like it's a cacophony of sound. Like I can't hear crap.
Well, that's good. Like that's probably good from where I'm sitting in the stands. It's probably good you don't hear it. But, I mean, you don't deal with them directly. Like some of the – like Greek was talking in the last podcast. I'm sure – I know you said you listened to it. But, you know, he's had to have altercations with parents. And I'm sure at the club level, you've seen that as a coach. I mean, I'm sure. And then you've also seen it as a ref. But, you know, I think – like, would you agree that that comes down to the coach controlling that aspect of – you know, I can see that – I can see you being a coach – having that conversation with your parents, like, I'm coaching the game. Like, we can't have any of that
yeah.
on the side. You know,
to an extent. Also, like, those people are adults. Like, they should be able to control themselves. Like,
should
is the operative word. I will say that, like, just because I'm very worried about referee retention, like, our numbers are okay. They could be a lot better, but they're fine right now for boys high school lacrosse. So my point of view the past like year or two is just like, I'm just gonna toss people during summertime because it's like, you know what, I don't want the next person to have to deal with this. I'm just gonna send you. So I don't know if that's the right way to handle it.
During those tournaments, do you, in the pregame meetings with the coaches, do you tell them like you have a short leash?
No.
It's
like antagonistic. That's just like you're in essence like having them try me, which no.
Oh, just, that's interesting. Sure.
Yeah. No. Yeah. It's just, and I'll be like, you know, if there's the proverbial ladder, so to speak, you lose the ball, we'll throw a flag for a 30 or we'll throw a flag for a minute. It's more so the parents that I have the main short leash for, where I'm just going to.
Well, yeah, but do you tell the coaches that?
No.
You know, like that, like I don't put up with anything from the sideline. So I'll just let you guys know.
Because they've spent money. Those parents have spent money. That coach has organized this whole thing.
Sure.
He's worried about his team. Like that's right. I don't want to put that on him.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's worried about game flow and things like that. So
what if nothing happens? You know, like
absolutely.
You just sound like
wait and see.
You sound like the curmudgeon ref.
Yeah.
That's gonna complain
yeah, exactly.
about something before something actually happens.
That's interesting.
And I already look curmudgeonly, so like why
you do have a very serious scowl most of the time if you know you're on this one.
That probably
field,
helps
sure.
though on the field.
Yeah, you mean business. That's all that means, man. That's all that means.
Yeah.
So in the NCAA, when you're doing games, are there pre-meetings with coaches, or do you have a ritual before the game? So pre-game, where you go up and just either small talk with coaches, or, you know, hey, how's the season going? That kind of stuff, to kind of build a level of camaraderie before you get into it. Or what is your approach?
So you meet with each coach 30 minutes before face-off, just to get their captains, their in-home. And then, so for those that don't know, the in-home is if there's a penalty on the bench, like that, the person that would serve that penalty.
So if the coach acts crazy, who's taking the penalty for the coach?
Or if it's, or if you don't know who the penalty is on, you know, just throw the in-home in there. And then if each coach, some coaches will have like, and you ask them like, hey, any questions or concerns? Some coaches will have a couple points. Other coaches are like, nah, I'm good. And so like, that's about it. I am fairly, introverted. So like, I don't really seek out the coaches, and it took like, I'm not comfortable with like a lot of them, cause I've, you know, seen them multiple times. So I'll like, you know, able to hold a conversation with them. But like there's also the whole thing of like, you know, while you're talking to the one coach, the other coach is, you know, some of them are like timing. How long are you talking to that coach? So like, all right, well, what was he talking about?
Just giving so equal
like,
time.
You gotta be careful with that.
Yeah.
There's the, you know, like, especially with me, teaching at Calvert Hall, there's a lot of Calvert Hall alumni playing all over the place. So like, I can't dap any of them up, you know, someone's watching from the stands. It's like,
man, you could tell your hell's that teacher, one ref dealing? You're in the lingo, man. You're dapping them up.
Yeah, like, I'm hip to it. I'm really hip.
Yeah, I mean, maybe you've actually taught a couple of my cousins, so they tell me how hip you are. So,
Yes, yeah.
You might even get to teach my son here coming up.
Ooh. Wow.
Interesting. Don't be dapping Kevin up either. Yes. Don't be dapping him up.
No.
So what is your interaction like with the players? I mean, with the players in general, you really don't have too much interaction with the players whatsoever then? I mean, obviously you don't want to like, you know, act like you've known them forever and, you know, dap them up and things like that. But like, do you have any interaction with them at all?
Yeah, like they'll be asking for stuff, you know, like, hey, watch for the slashing, or especially like the face-off guys, because, you know, that's a big part of the sport.
Yeah.
So they'll be asking, you know, like, and you can, and, you know, a lot of times I'm responding like, hey, I saw that. I didn't think it was like, this is how I saw it. Like, I didn't think he got your elbow at all.
So you're willing to like listen and calmly respond. I think that's helpful.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because they need to know, I mean, that.
Like, and then like, there's always, you know, there's like one kid a team who's just going to complain.
Yes.
And so it's just like, all right, not going to pay attention to you anymore. But
do you like, pay attention to speaking captains more than other players, or are they all just the same?
No, because I totally forget those numbers as soon as I write them down.
Totally. Absolutely. I forget too, like, who's the speaking captain? I don't know. Hilarious.
Also, that is very much a soccer thing. There's like the one speaking captain that can talk, and I just, from coaching, like, that's like a big thing.
Yeah.
Like, I don't care. I'm not going to, and so I also do like box lacrosse, and that's the thing of box lacrosse. Like, there's the speaking captain of box. Like, that's the person that talks to you. Like, no one else is. Supposedly.
Right, so, like, but you don't know.
And field across. I write the number down on my card. Sure.
To honor that.
Well, in soccer, don't they wear the, yes. In soccer, they wear the captain armband, so it helps you out.
They wear the armband, yeah.
But correct. You have a speaking correct. Captain within the captains. Like, if you have three captains, one is speaking captain.
We're not
going to
get
captain.
Into the nuances of my favorite sport of soccer.
Exactly.
Okay. I mean, technically, there should only be one person wearing the band in soccer.
Oh, that's the speaking captain. Ah, okay.
But
okay.
I would like for you to tell a high school player who is a captain, you can't wear that band. Like, so that's why there's multiple kids with bands in some games, depending upon how strict the coaches want it. But like, that's not a thing in lacrosse.
Well, in the NFL, I think there's 10 out of the 11 guys on the field now that have the captain C on their chest. So same kind of thing, I guess. Yeah, who knows?
Well, yeah.
And they're all like, talking also, so.
Correct.
Yeah. Is there a way that players can or coaches can address you and get a better response versus another way that they'll like not get a good response from you based on how they asked that question?
Well, so like the question that's actually a question is going to be answered. The question that's actually a statement.
A statement.
Yeah. It's more of like, wasn't that a slash? It's like, no, right. It wasn't a slash.
Yeah, you can answer that. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Why didn't you throw the flag on that? Because I didn't like, so there's
versus like you got to throw the flag on that. Like I'm sure that's another way.
Yeah.
You know, and you're not going to get as much of like your response based on the rules.
Correct. Also, like, you know, what did you see there? Like, oh, clearly answer that question. And sometimes like if that question's asked as I'm like sprinting down the, well, my version of sprinting down the field. So like, I can't necessarily give the greatest answer. So it's all be like, you know, why, like a phrase that's, we use a lot in the pregame is like, we'll get you an answer. It might not be as fast as you want it, but we will get an answer. So
yeah,
I would just find it funny. Like when I go watch like my buddy coach or, you know, just like he's yelling at whoever's closest, right? Like it might not be the guy that made the call, but he's going to yell at that guy who is he's walking up and down the field next to that poor ref that's on his side. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like he's just going to wear him out until he gets the answer. And a lot of times you see the guy going, I didn't make the call. Like, I don't know what he saw. Like, this is what I saw, you know, kind of giving him, you know, the answers there. But yeah, I mean, that's
well, then another thing is you also need to know, like, responsibilities for the referees. So like the guy that's right next to the goal, he's worried about the goal. The guy that's either the single on the other side of the field or the trail, they're watching the shooter. So when someone gets blown up in front of a referee, he might not have actually seen it because he's watching the goal. So the whole like why did you throw it from all the way over there? Well, like I was watching the shooter. So
yeah,
that the, you know, and that's like something that I would have screamed at when I was a young coach. Like, well,
but as a
flag
ref,
he was all the way over there.
As a ref, do you go into each game knowing, okay, this is my role based on the position of the field? Like if you're,
you're rotating. It's not like basketball that where you rotate in the middle of a play. You rotate after a goal.
Interesting.
Yeah, so like when we do our pregame, we're going over all the roles, so to speak. There's no set position.
Yeah.
It's not like where, to go back to soccer, there's not two ARs on the side and then the guy in the middle. You're going all over the place.
How are you guys held accountable? So is there a, you know, governing body that, I mean, I know there's a governing body, but did they pull the refs together and kind of go over calls, or how does that look?
So we have like weekly, let's say there's like 12 weeks in a season thereabouts. There's like a weekly meeting, 10 out of the 12. Typically they're like Thursday nights. It's like a Zoom call. And then there's, beginning of the year, like 2-day meeting in December, that you go to.
In the weekly meetings, what are some things that would be talked about?
They go over play scenarios. From like all of, cause it's national. So it's, you know, from, you know, whatever film they have. They also go over various techniques or skills that they're trying to have develop. And you also have to like understand that, like, you know, people from, you know, college referees that are doing, you know, games in like Utah, college, they're on the same call. So you have to play to like a wide audience, so to speak.
Do you find those meetings helpful?
I think like all meetings, some are good.
This could have been an email.
But
it's a good idea in theory, an outsider looking in. For me, I and also maybe it's also how long you've been reffing. You know, maybe you've seen it all. But yeah.
Well, there's definitely some things that like at least once a week, there's like a play that like, okay, I would love to see like clarification to like make sure that this was done right. And then also like, this is our first year with video review. So that's been
a hot topic.
I think those meetings have been important. Oh my gosh, you have no idea.
Very cool. Do you like it?
I do, but it's the first year of a sport doing something. So
there's going to be kinks to work out.
Yeah, you're definitely like finding your way in the dark in certain instances. So.
Yeah,
but no, I think it's been good so far.
How do you do VAR for a college lacrosse?
So it Depends on the location. There's no, it's only on anything involving like a goal call or a high hit. And so the coaches can throw one challenge, half, as long as they have a timeout, or the referees can look at it. And then the last 4 minutes, the challenge can only come from the referees, last 4 minutes of the game. So I've had it a few times in my games, the head official and the person closest to the play go to the monitor and, you know, whatever angle you got, you go from there. And the other person stands, you know, on the field, just making sure both teams are kind of, it's treated like a timeout, so to speak. So the teams go to the, you just kind of, you go from there. So, yeah.
So if you had to, change anything about, you know, the way that officials are treated or anything in the referee world that you could shine a light on or that you would want to change, what would that be for you?
That referees are people. If you could treat them with the grace that you would treat your family, that would be awesome. I would say lacrosse, we're fairly well paid. If you're talking about like a basketball or soccer official, you've got people running up and down the sidelines for like 30, 35 bucks a game for an hour's game, and you're giving them crap. Why? There's a really good.
What's the end game here? Yeah.
There's a really good video. It's from Frank Martin. He's at UMass now, but this is when he was the South Carolina basketball coach. And I don't know how he got on. It was like a post-game interview. And so it's just him talking about, you know, when he goes to his kids' games, he doesn't say anything. Like he just, I'm in the stands. You know, if the kids come to me and say, what did I do wrong? I say, whoa, don't talk to me. Talk to your coach. You know, like coach, like if you're not getting the coaching from your coach, then we'll have that conversation. But go to your coach. Parents, like, why are you telling him what to do on the field? Like, let the coach. You know, don't yell. So I love that. It's like a 5-minute clip.
You know, to your point, like, you know, when I go out and to coach a baseball game or to coach one of my daughter's softball games, like these are probably 9 and 10 year old kids that are umpiring my daughter's, you know, 9, 10 softball game. Like they're basically this, like a little bit older than Megan, probably like 11 or 12 year olds, you know, that are umpiring. Like, are we really going to argue whether they were safe or out at first? Like, it's just not going to happen. You know what I mean? I always do talk to my parents before the season and just kind of let them know, like, hey, there's no scouts here. Like nobody's looking at your kid for college now because they're 8. We don't need to take this very seriously. I want to win. Like I'm a competitive person, but I'm not going to yell at a 13-year-old kid because I think they made the wrong call in a fast pitch softball game for 8-year-olds. But I can see your level at that D1, you know, where, like you said, it's that coach's profession. And a lot of times, all the time, those D1 athletes, that's their job also. I mean, those kids are, I mean, it's nonstop, right, for lacrosse. I mean, that's what they do when they're at the school. I mean, they go to class, they, you know, that kind of stuff. But, you know, they put a lot of time and effort into it.
Yeah,
I think they get a little bit more.
It is a job.
Yeah, they get more of a rope, you know. But they also have to be respectful, to your point, like, you know, treat the refs like they're people, right?
And I would say like 98% of people do. So it's the summer tournaments and then like the youth club stuff is where I feel like our high school officials have the most issues to deal with just because of the quest for the scholarship, just the egos. It is a business. You've got all these club teams trying to keep their clientele or poach clientele or.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of money at stake, even though the games are, you know, anywhere from, you know, like 10 years old to 14 years old. So I would say those are definitely our toughest games that we do as a organization. It has gotten worse as it has, you know, with all sports.
And is that because of the parents, you think?
Yeah.
Yeah, because I mean, I've seen it in baseball with Kevin's group. I mean, they'll be 14 this year, and it just amazes. It doesn't surprise me anymore, but it definitely amazes me. You know how I'm gonna say crazy because I think that's what it is. I mean, just how crazy some of these people get on the sidelines. I mean, it's just, it's kind of crazy. Just to witness it and, you know, as how serious they're taking it. But to your point, some of these kids are, you know, getting looked at for private high schools and, you know, there's a lot invested. You mentioned the money piece of it. Travel sports are expensive as hell, you know, cause you got, you know, boys coming up in that, you know, club lacrosse. And it's almost like, you know, you have to play the club stuff or the travel stuff to be looked at for some of these schools, and the competitive nature of them is going to lean to some of the parents kind of diving in a little bit more than they should, but it is just, it's out of control at this point. I mean, this is really one of the reasons why we started the podcast to begin with, was there was a systematic failure and kind of a, you know, youth sports itself was, there was a broken element to it. And a lot of it's really the parents. And for me, the coaches need to kind of grasp it a little bit more, but it is difficult for a coach to be responsible for, you know, these parents that have put up the time and the money, you know, to get their kids to these different games and practices and whatnot.
Matt, you have a really good perspective based on, you know, you're coaching your kids now. You played, you've hit every level, officiating, coaching. Like, I mean, do you have any thoughts and ideas on how to shift a culture for the better here?
Oh, wow. Let me get on my
I know, right? That's a big one. That's a big one. That's a big one. But I just feel like I honestly felt like I think you have some answers here. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong, but.
Well, I mean, I do have my son's sixth grade lacrosse game. Like, if we win, like, great. If we lose, okay. Like, it's not, it's important, but it's not the end of the world. So, like, I feel like, you know, as a parent, you know, like, what are you hoping to get out of this team, of this season? You know, ideally it's your son has gotten better, or your daughter
playing. And wants to play again, I think, right? And like, try it again next year.
And enjoys being with people and enjoys the greatest thing about that I've had being a ref is just the myriad people that I've met from like all different walks of life, you know, from reffing that I now consider like good friends. That's like, you know, you're on a team, like you get that camaraderie, you get that companionship. That's a positive, I would say, in this world today. So, the more that you can, as a coach, emphasize not necessarily wins and losses, which is easier for me to say because I don't care about a club's bottom line.
Yeah.
But are you skill building? Are they getting better? Are they improving? Then if that's the case, then great. Like, and you know what? If, you know, kids leave to another club because of greener pastures, okay. Like, I will, I want to keep. I want to keep kids that want to get better, but like I think you got to focus more on we're building skills, we're getting better as a whole, and you want to make sure that you're bringing in coaches that emphasize and believe in that ethos, which is it's a lot easier said than done. But
yeah, I mean, it sounds corny, but my kids, like, every time, you know, I'm coaching the girls in softball, I told them I'm going to ask you two questions after every practice and after every game. The first is, did we have fun? And the second one is, did we get better? And if the answer is not yes to both of those questions, then I have work to do as a coach, right? Mm-hmm. So that's what I do. And it's corny to say, but and at the end of the day, like, the girls will come up to me all the time. And when we were 7-8 softball last year, we didn't really keep score because everybody batted, everybody scored. You know, one of those things. I mean, I always knew what the score was because I'm crazy, but I didn't necessarily, you know, tell the girls what was going on. Like, you know, it's like, it doesn't matter. Like, it really doesn't. Like, let's just
keep getting better. Did you have every girl's, like, on base percentage, Anthony?
Yes, no, I mean, I'm sure he did.
I didn't break it down like that.
For sure.
Or did I? No, maybe not.
What was their WAR?
their wins above replacement. Yeah, we didn't have all that.
Yes.
Yeah.
I feel like, come on.
What are you doing?
I know. I'm
completely when you're talking, it's just security versus insecurity, isn't it? And if you can securely say that you're trying your best and you have everyone's best intentions, you know, I think then whether you either like it and you stay, or you don't and you go somewhere else, and that's okay, right? But it's when,
which is really tough, like. Mm-hmm. It's so, like, I mean, just from coaching and dealing with college, like I understand the whole, how the whole process works. So like not everybody understands that. So like I get, right. Like my point of view is going to be different than others, but it just, that's just how I feel.
So. I think it's helpful to have that big picture. I do. I think, you know, you see it at all the levels and you can put things into perspective. And it's a lot easier for people to get caught up into their smaller world because it's all they know. It's in their face and they're spending money and, you know, it's that snowball effect there. But if you can step back and look at the big picture.
Yeah, you need the
return on investment. You need that ROI. So like I totally get that.
Yep. Yeah, but like to be clear about what that is specifically, right? Skill building.
And I would say
is return on investment.
You are correct.
Absolutely.
Correct.
Yeah, and I think like a lot of people who coach youth sports it gets diminished a little bit. You know, you're thinking of like obviously with coaches, you think like the high level college coach, but in actuality, like the youth coach is really that first, you know, authority figure other than parents that these kids are dealing with, other than teachers, obviously. But you know, that level of coaching is sort of builds their foundation of how they're going to be coached throughout their entire life and whether they're going to be coachable or not. But the problem is, I mean, and you know, Matt, like in the rec leagues, like who's coaching? A lot of them are kind of guilted into doing it, or it's like, hey, we need one more coach. We can't have a league. You know what I mean? So I kind of take it as like, you know, when I ask people to coach, if I'm the commissioner of the baseball league or the softball league, like I do want people to step up and volunteer their time. But I also want them to take it kind of seriously too, right? You don't want somebody who's out there for the wrong reasons just because you need a coach, right? Right. So I feel like it's a very important role at the younger levels. And even though you're not getting paid to do it, I really think that that role at the youth level is super important.
I would agree. And the more so, like you're trying to instill a love of sports and you don't want to make that sport a grind. Like that early in life. So
like it's like the D1 level grind. Well, correct. Even I would say all NCAAs at this point, even D3, you're doing 2-a-days, you're waking up early for lifting. You know, it's intense. So
correct.
You know, they're gonna burn correct. Out if they have that intensity too early. You really do have to have passion and joy, and that helps you get through the grind.
I would also say as a coach, you need yourself passion and joy and YouTube. There are so many great coaching drills of all sports on YouTube.
Yeah.
I mean, most of the stuff that I, you know, learned in college is obsolete, you know.
Yeah.
Like
the game changes, doesn't it?
Have a wooden stick.
That's right.
Yeah, so
absolutely.
All the drills that I do now are like, you know, from YouTube.
And I do girls lacrosse, and someone reached out to me to be like, hey, where are you getting your drills? I'm like, I don't know. I just go online and I'll get drills from boys, men's lacrosse, basketball, baseball. Like, you know, there are some really cool things out there across the board based on what my need is for the week for my team to focus on. So I think that creativity and keeping an open mind, like get away from, well, this is how I played, because odds are the game has changed and we need to just, we have to be a little bit more creative and flexible, I think, as coaches, to continue to keep those kids having fun. Because the drills I did back in the day, they were not fun. They were boring.
Well, I was one of those
coaches. You know, now you could do really fun drills.
Yeah, I was one of those coaches that got thrown into coaching girls basketball this year. Our buddy Rob Bisco, Matt, another Calvert Hall grad of 98. He's the commissioner of the basketball league and soccer. He does way too much up here in Harford County. But he called me when he saw my daughter's name. And he's like, I need one more coach. I'm like, of course you're going to call me.
Sure you do.
And I finally just said, I'm like, look, man, why don't you make all the calls you need to make? And if you still don't have a coach, call me. And 30 seconds later, he called me back. I'm like, dude, you can try,
you didn't try very hard.
A little bit harder.
Yeah, he didn't make any calls.
No.
Yeah,
but like, well, I know basketball decent. I mean, decently, like nothing like where I'm going to be like a head coach of, you know. And obviously it was, you know, young girls across, or young girls basketball. So, you know, a lot of my kids have never seen a basketball before, much less played. So I had to go. I mean, I was on YouTube all the time trying to figure out, like, where do I start? Like, where is the best place to start? You know, and really strip it down. I think the first two practices, we didn't even have a ball. You know what I mean? Like, we just got to get some basic stuff down here, you know?
You going like Norman Dale style Hoosiers? Yeah, man. Is that what you were doing?
I was doing all kinds of stuff.
Earn the right.
We were playing Sharks and Minnows. We were playing all kinds of stuff, buddy. Cops and Robbers.
But they came back.
Hey, we won a couple games toward
the
end.
That's the win.
Not that it's important, but they needed a couple victories there. They needed a couple
wins. Winning's fun.
Yeah, it is fun.
Yeah. Well, I know a kid who his club team plays in the Harco or Hoco League. I think it's Hoco, right? Yes. And last year they got blown out of every game. And these kids are like 7. And it was horrible. And, you know, they were like, we need to get into a different level division. Like, we need to get down a notch, you know. They won their first game by, like, 1 point. Maybe they lost by 1. They felt like they won this past weekend, you know, getting into the right division and all. Yeah, there you go.
Hey, moral victories are
that matters.
Right?
It does. It
does. Totally agree.
Well, we could talk about this all night, couldn't we?
Yeah, 100%.
Well, we really appreciate you, Matt, and your insight. And man, I mean, I just learned a lot tonight as well, and appreciate the insight for sure.
Yeah, and
I enjoyed it immensely. And thank you for the invite.
Nikki has a national championship, you know, lacrosse coach at the JUCO level. I'm sure she's worn out a referee or two in her time. So,
well, you know, it's funny.
Oh, really?
With
who?
Harford Community College.
So go Owls.
The Fighting Owls. That's right. Hoot. I coached there for 10 years and we won 2 national championships.
I just said national championship. I didn't mean two. Sorry.
I ended up stepping down in 2021. So right around that, you mentioned you had stopped at Lock Raven. You had said, you know, back in the, when you were younger, right? And you were a younger coach, like yelling and all that stuff. And I was like that. I got really stuck in the little things sometimes. So the more I did it, the more I learned not to do that. And
I will say, reffing JUCO games is where you learn the most about the rules, because weird stuff happens.
It does happen. So many weird things. It's weird.
How you learn the rules.
Yes. That's it. Well, that's it. I mean, you learn by doing. And a lot of times it's just failing, learning, trying again, repeat.
Very much so.
Do you ref any of the JUCO? Harford is hosting the national tournament this year.
So they are. Nice. Yeah. Well, they won it last year, right?
They did win it last year. Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep. So, and I would honestly fully expect them to do it again. They're crushing it. So it's exciting for them.
Every time I'm on that field, it's cold and windy.
Yeah, the men.
Oh, wow. Mm-hmm. Great.
Yep.
Yeah, it's not allowed to not be cold and windy on that field, I swear.
I'll tell you what, it's always windy there. It's always windy.
That's funny because that's not far from Shucks Regional Complex, right across the way where we play baseball. It is always windy there. It's like,
it is.
It's always like, I live like literally 2 minutes drive from both those places. Mm-hmm. And my house could be 85 and it's 72 and windy there. It's like, what happened?
The wind is a constant. Yeah, that's crazy. For sure. The farmland just lets it come through. I mean, so we'll start, you know, back when I was there. Mid-January, you start, you know, you're out in the field.
Oh, God.
Guaranteed to be, like, horribly freezing. And then by March, you're just good to go. You're just acclimated to it, you know?
Well, thanks, man. We really appreciate having you on. And, you know, we definitely learned a lot. Hopefully you had a good time with it as well.
I did.
Thanks for listening to the Coaching Up Podcast with Anthony Davis and Nikki Murphy. Be sure to subscribe, like, and share this podcast with others.